Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, July 16, 2014. More deadly fighting is reported between pro- and anti-government forces in northern Bahar el-Ghazal. A local official in Awil says more than 25 forces were killed.
From their side, there is 29 was killed. There's one in Brigadier and one colonel and others in the Atolia.
And South Sudan launches a vaccine program that officials say will save thousands of lives despite the current troubles the country is facing.
In spite of the challenges of this government, from austerity measures to floods to coup, still in the health sector, we are achieving and achieving big time.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The relative peace in northern Bahar el-Ghazal state over the past 7 months has apparently been broken in the last few days. Local officials say at least 30 people were killed during fighting between anti-government and pro-government forces in the last 2 days alone. They say an estimated 200-strong rebel force attacked villages in Awil West, Awil North, and Awil Central counties, and they clashed with pro-government forces, leaving scores injured. For VOA News, Abraham Agoth reports from Awil.
Garang Kwasharyath, the Awil West County Commissioner, says the fighting between pro- and anti-government forces started on Monday evening and continued up through yesterday afternoon.
In an area called Mayombol, part of Awil North, we have a poor who was wounded and we are taken down to Awil Hospital. But it is not a big issue. It is very, very easy and small wounded. From their side, there is 29 was killed. There's one in Brigadier and one colonel and others in the Atolia.
Ariad says the dead rebels include a brigadier and a colonel. He says pro-government forces are pursuing the defectors.
Brigadier called Golwan. And colonel is called James Jok. James Jok Palmashar. Three brigadier, but now I think there is remain two. And our forces is still pulling them.
Defense Minister Kwol Menyangyuk says the attackers were soldiers who defected from the SPLA's 5th Division in Western Bahar el-Ghazal State recently.
The rebels who deserted their units some weeks back, about 2 weeks back, and they have been just roaming about trying to go to Sudan from the western part of South Sudan, northern Bahar el-Ghazal territory, trying to cross to Sudan. They attacked the population, of course, with the intention of getting food. And so there was fighting. They retreated.
Kwol says government forces are pursuing the rebels. Santino Mayuatngong, who represents a Awil Central County in the State Legislative Assembly, says soldiers who defected from the government clashed with the government forces in his area last Thursday.
They came to a place called Awada. They looted all the properties of the IRC, that is the hospital, I mean the clinics. They took 5,000 and then captured two people and killed one person. The name is not a fear. And the two people I have now is somebody called Gerjuak Nyangwa. The second person is Deng Ugwak Chan.
But SPLM in opposition military spokesperson Lul Ruai Kong denies any knowledge of clashes between pro- and anti-government forces in northern Bahar el-Ghazal state.
No, I have no information about any fighting in northern Bahar el-Ghazal in general and Awil West in particular, let alone losing 30 of our fighters. This culture of looting and abducting people is not part of our culture. If there were any abductions, then these must be nomads. The Misiri and the rest who normally come to northern Awil. We do not have this culture about abducting people, abducting them, taking them where.
Local officials said there were reports of more defections in some counties in northern Bahar el-Ghazal state, but they could not verify those reports. SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguirre confirms there was fighting in northern Bahar el-Ghazal state, but denies there were new defections from the area. He says those causing mayhem in Awil are SPLA soldiers who defected from Pell and WOW in western Barak Zale state.
So in their march toward the north, they went to areas in western Awil or western part of northern Barak Zale, and this is where they appeared. So it's not a new group.
Agur says the defecting soldiers are ambushed on their vehicles. He says they were pursued by the SPLA as they headed towards Sudan.
This is a business accusation. You know, there is general breakdown of law and order in government control areas, and whenever they are failing, they find someone to blame the failures on, and we have become one of the scapegoats.
Awul West County Commissioner Karen Kwacharia says, as of this morning, the situation is calm and appealed to the area's residents not to panic. For VOA News, I'm Abraham Agoth in Awil, northern Barak Zale state.
Lucy Pony contributed to this story. The governor of Central Equatoria State fears that increasing insecurity is affecting farming in the state. Governor Clement Wani Konga made his comments in a speech today. As Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba, state authorities are encouraging local farmers to produce much-needed food to avoid importing from Uganda.
Governor Konga was speaking to lawmakers during the reopening of the Central Equatoria State Legislative Assembly in Juba. The state parliament has been in recess for the last 3 months. Konga says Central Equatoria State is facing instability that could affect agricultural activities during the country's current rainy season. He says insecurity caused by pastoralists is preventing farmers from cultivating their fields.
This has continued to create insecurity among communities of Central Equatoria State. The widespread influx of internally displaced persons from the cattle-owning communities for the neighboring states has disrupted the normal farming activities and the environment throughout the state.
Konga also told the lawmakers that some communities within South Sudan are arming themselves for unknown reasons. He is calling on the national government to disarm civilians who pose security threats.
There is ongoing arming of the cattle keepers, whereby it further aggravates the insecurity situation in the state.
The governor did not mention which communities have weapons in Central Equatoria State. Konga says there was a report of an ambush by armed men in vehicles traveling along the busy Juba-Nimule road. He could not provide any casualty figures on the alleged ambush. He says his government has formed a state crisis management committee to coordinate efforts to address the situation. Speaker of the State Assembly, Naptali Hassan Gale, says South Sudanese citizens should stop acts of violence and concentrate on supporting the recent peace agreements signed by President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. He says peace cannot be achieved in an environment where some communities still believe in the use of force.
These are good gestures for peace that needs to be supported because our people have suffered enough. As leaders, we should give peace a chance. I appeal to the rebels to embrace peace, as killing ourselves will not solve or will not provide a solution to our problem.
Juba is the capital of Central Equatoria State and at the same time the capital of the Republic of South Sudan. Since the eruption of violence in mid-December, residents of Juba town have continued to live in fear. Sporadic gunfire can be heard frequently at night both in the town and the surrounding area. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
President Salva Kiir wrapped up a visit to western Bahar al-Ghazal today with a call for peace throughout South Sudan. Michael Latit was at the rally in WOW, where Mr. Kiir urged South Sudanese to set aside their differences and unite as a nation. President Kiir says his government wants to end the seven-month-old conflict that he says has killed too many people. He says he wants to protect all South Sudanese, regardless of whose side they are on, in the fighting.
Be resolved by peaceful means.
I am ready to resolve our conflict through peaceful means because those who have been killed, whether on the side of the government or the side of Riek Machar, and whether they died of bullets or sickness or hunger, they are all my people. I am the president of this republic. so I care for them. I don't want any more citizens of South Sudan to die.
Mr. Kiir rejected the notion that the conflict is a tribal war between the Dinka and Nuer people. He said that because of this misperception, many innocent people from the two ethnic groups have lost their lives. He called on the people of Greater Bahar El Ghazal to forget the past and move forward as part of a united country.
I want to tell you, Dinka people, to forgive Riek Machar and all the people who did what they've been doing to you. No revenge. There is no revenge. We will not mobilize our people to go and fight the Nuer in Bantu. Not at all.
The president said South Sudanese should focus on his government's achievements rather than its failures. He lashed out at unnamed foreign governments and groups that he says are false friends to South Sudan.
All of those white people who come here every day and claim to be friends of South Sudan, some of them are the worst enemies of South Sudan. They just come here and look for bad things to report. If they see a good thing, they just turn their back to it.
Mr. Kiir was speaking less than a week after the European Union slapped targeted sanctions on an SPLA commander and the leader of a rebel militia group in South Sudan, saying they are blocking the peace process. President Kiir made a similar pledge in June to end the conflict through dialogue, but fighting has continued since then, and peace talks have been put on indefinite hold, and more people have fled their homes. This report was prepared by Michael Atit in WOW.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Stray dogs that are lost or separated from their owners can look helpless, but they can also be dangerous and carry bad diseases. One such disease, rabies, is a serious threat in Africa, where it kills more people than in any other part of the world. The greatest risk is to children, young boys in particular, who approach the animals to play and then get bitten. To protect your family, eliminate anything that attracts stray animals to your area. Store food so it has no scent to attract dogs. Bury or burn trash. And don't keep water in open bowls or containers. All these things can protect you and your children from the threat of disease caused by bites from stray dogs.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A vaccine program is launched in South Sudan with hopes of cutting its high child mortality rate. That story when we come back.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
which is better, being rich or being famous?
Being rich is good because you can actually do everything that you want. You can buy anything. You can go anywhere that you want. You can stay or live the lifestyle that you want.
Being famous is better. If you're famous, some famous men or famous people are known. Can it attract words, you know?
I don't see any difference between being rich and being famous. So when you are rich, you are already famous. You have got, you are famous. You are known by every person. So to me, when you are rich, you are famous. You can't be famous when you are, when you are a layman.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan is launching the pentavalent vaccine today, which officials say will help prevent five killer diseases. Government officials and NGOs who are providing support to the government say preventable diseases claim the lives of thousands of children each year. As Philip Aleo reports for VOA from Juba, they also say South Sudan has made significant progress since 2006.
Pentavalent vaccine, which is administered by injection, protects children against diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, hepatitis B, and pneumonia, and are administered in a three-dose schedule. Etia Hedgings, a representative of the United Nations Children's Fund, or UNICEF, says child mortality rate in South Sudan have been reduced from 135 deaths per 1,000 live births in 2006 to 108 deaths per 1,000 live births in 2010. Hedgings says this progress is a result of vaccines reaching more children in the country. But she says the child mortality rate is still far too high in this country.
Only 32% of children in South Sudan are fully immunized before their first birthday, meaning too many South Sudanese children are not protected from killer diseases that are easily preventable by use of vaccines. But much more needs to be done to ensure that all children are fully immunized before their first birthday.
Hedgings says most South Sudanese children are not vaccinated because some parents do not bring their children to the nearest health facility. Martin Elias Lomoro, the Minister of Cabinet Affairs, who presides over today's event, says progress made in lowering the child mortality rate demonstrates the government's ability to deliver vaccines and other important services despite the constraints on resources.
And you know, in spite of the challenges of this government, from austerity measures to floods to coup, still, in the health sector, we are achieving and achieving big time. And despite the challenges that are related to the accessibility due to the wideness of our country, poor roads and natural impediments such as swamps in some wet areas, immunization has been effective since South Sudan has remained polio-free for the last 5 years. We are polio-free even if we are the youngest country in the world. Mabru.
Lomoro says the conflict, which has displaced more than a million people from their homes to neighboring countries or to the United Nations camps within the country, is posing yet another challenge to vaccinating children under the age of 5. He says mobile clinics provided by health partners like UNICEF, the World Health Organization, and Medicine Sans Frontiers, or MSF, helps reduce child deaths. MSF reported this week that the number of malnourished children in South Sudan has skyrocketed since the fighting started 7 months ago. Lomoro says parents have the responsibility to get their children immunized.
The pentavalent vaccine is replacing what is now in use, the trivalent vaccine. And we encourage our mothers and parents and fathers, and I want to repeat, fathers, they just want to produce children and they refuse to look after children. We want you to take care of these children and that you should know that there is a schedule and there is a station, there is a place where you take your children for vaccination.
Lomoro says the government will ensure that all children are vaccinated in the country, irrespective of whether or not they are displaced due to the ongoing fighting. Makur Kariam, the Undersecretary of the National Ministry of Health, says children in opposition control areas are also being vaccinated.
It's the policy of the government now that any citizen of this country, wherever they may be, must not be denied the health care. By that, we mean people who are living behind the government lines, meaning the counties that are still under the control of the rebels, spread like a Kobo, the health services can still get them there right from Juba. And we speak, flights are ferrying from here to those places. So we are going to reach them through that same mechanism, working with our partners.
Kariam says the Fenta vaccine is sponsored by the Global Health Organization, Gavi, through its health partners. He says Gavi is providing United States dollars, $8 million, and the government provides $1 million over the course of 4 years. For BOA News, I am Philip Aleu in Juba.
When South Sudan gained independence 3 years ago, millions returned or traveled home for the first time to help build their nation. But many quickly learned the challenges were more difficult than anticipated. And with political conflict and violence persisting for the last 7 months, a number of South Sudanese are doubting their own future and that of their country. Bena Mushla has this report from Juba.
What's up, people? Please, don't you see? I'm a Southern Sudanese.
Mayor Ayang sits in a cafe in Juba, wearing short hair, an orange sundress, and long golden earrings. In 2010, she came to South Sudan to vote for independence. She feels nostalgic about that time.
It was an amazing experience. It was a highlight for many South Sudanese, the referendum time. People came from everywhere to vote for the first time for their country, for independence.
The 28-year-old was raised in Khartoum, Sudan, and studied in South Africa. She came to Juba to help establish the National Archives at the Ministry of Culture. She discovered what she had to offer was not wanted.
I was frustrated of not being able to serve my country to the fullest with the skill that I have, which is a situation that many young men and women are going through. So many skilled people coming from different places. It's either you're corrupt to get your things done, or you have a connection or a relative or something. And nobody cares what you know or what you can do. It's about who you know and how much you have, kind of thing. And I was naive about that, very naive about that in the beginning.
Ayang voiced her frustration through music. After gaining some popularity in an East African singing contest on TV, she recorded the single Southern Sudanese about the problem of tribalism. It became a local hit. A future in music seemed possible, but in December the country's two largest ethnic groups started fighting, killing thousands and displacing 1.5 million people. Ayang says she lost 7 cousins and fled with her family to neighboring Uganda for a time. She came back a few months ago, but can't see a future right now.
I am literally currently very somehow numb emotionally. People are trying to do something, but like I'm literally just not doing anything. I want to reflect on the situation and somehow reach a discernment within myself of what I can do and how I can do it effectively.
Behind Juba's basketball stadium stands the house of Akuja de Garang. She left Southern Sudan in the early 80s, grew up and studied in Britain, and came back in 2004. In 2012, she started the Festival for Fashion and Arts for Peace, a fashion show to promote local designers and artists from South Sudan's different regions and foster cultural dialogue. De Garang could not believe it when the new conflict started in December after a nearly 40-year fight for independence from Sudan.
What are we going to say to our grandchildren? What did we do with this country that we fought for so hard, and lots of people have died and lives have been basically completely changed? And now we're letting ourselves go back to that again? Because 2-3 of us are not agreeing?
The 39-year-old says that some of the artists from Jonglei and Upper Nile states she worked with have been displaced. She has lost contact. But despite the conflict, she plans to stage her festival this August, the third since independence.
We are still moving on with our plans, with our life. We can't stop. I mean, yes, it's still sometimes at the beginning we felt like we were in limbo, particularly in January. But then we thought to ourselves, like, what's this? What's the option? To start a whole new life in East Africa? Or, you know, no. That was not an option for us. We said we're going back, we're carrying on, and with the hope that, of course, nothing is guaranteed, but we can't stop living.
De Garang says she believes cultural dialogue is now more urgent than ever, and she and her husband are not thinking of leaving anytime soon. Thousands of other South Sudanese are facing similar choices. Only time will tell what the majority decides. Bernard Müchler for VOA News, Juba.
A new report says it's possible to end the AIDS epidemic by 2030 if millions of marginalized people can get life-saving treatment for HIV. The UN AIDS report finds new HIV infections are at their lowest level this century. But the news for South Sudan isn't good. The report says South Sudan is facing a triple threat of high rates of HIV, low treatment, and little decline in new infections. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where the report's being launched ahead of next week's International AIDS Conference in Australia.
The new UN report finds tremendous progress is being made in reducing the number of new HIV infections and in keeping more people with HIV/AIDS alive. It estimates that at the end of last year, 35 million people globally were living with HIV. 2.1 million were newly infected, and 1.5 million had died from AIDS-related illnesses. Sub-Saharan Africa has the highest number of people living with HIV, followed by people in the Asia-Pacific region. The report says nearly 13 million people with HIV have access to antiretroviral treatment. But it notes millions more are denied access to these life-saving drugs because they are marginalized, criminalized, or suffer from discrimination. They include men who have sex with men, transgender people, sex workers, prisoners, and injected drug users. The report shows these people are among 19 million of the 35 million people living with HIV today who do not know they have the virus. So, says UNAIDS Executive Director Michelle Sidibe, they will not seek treatment, and this will impede efforts to bring the HIV/AIDS epidemic under control.
There will be no end to the AIDS epidemic if we don't put people first and close the gap. This report gives the best data possible on people being left behind. If the 19 million people who are living with HIV don't find out their status, they will die. But if they do, they will access treatment and live full and healthy lives.
Dr. Sidibe says the world will be on track to end the epidemic by 2030 if antiretroviral treatment for millions of HIV-positive people is scaled up by 2020. But entire countries are being left behind and are facing the triple threat of high HIV burden, low treatment coverage, and no or little decline in new HIV infections. The report shows 15 countries account for more than 75% of the global burden of new HIV infections. Three countries in sub-Saharan Africa, Nigeria, South Africa, and Uganda, account for 48% of all new HIV infections. Dr. Sidibe tells VOA these countries are not progressing for several reasons.
You take countries like, I said, the Central African Republic, you have only 14% of coverage. Countries with war, countries with a lack of a governance system, all health system not existing, collapse, and others. But you have Democratic Republic of Congo. Again, a major challenge, as you know, governance, issues of war, post-war, and difficulties to really reach all.
The report shows African countries are not alone in facing problems. For example, it notes HIV infections are high in the Russian Federation because people who inject drugs are marginalized and do not get the services they need. The United States is cited for its high rate of HIV infections, placing it among the top 15 countries in the world. This, the report says, is mainly due to certain critical groups, such as black women and men who have sex with men, being left behind. The report says the key to ending the AIDS epidemic lies in focusing on helping populations that are underserved and at higher risk of HIV get the treatment they need. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Walma by the Abyei Jazz Band. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. Tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.